It's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. You're very welcome along to Thursday's edition of the 9 till Noon Show. It's it's 4 minutes past nine on this, the 6th of March. I do hope you're very well indeed. And we look forward to keeping you occupied and entertained, hopefully for the next 3 hours. And we want you to keep us informed of your views and anything you think we should be talking about. WhatsApps and texts come into us via those familiar numbers, 086 60 25000. We'd love to hear from you as well if you're outside the Republic, 00 35386 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07 491 25000. And also emails come into us via comments at highlandradio.com. So if you are listening to the podcast or indeed the repeat overnight, feel free to email if there's something that pops up that you want to share an opinion on. And of course, you can watch the show on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. That's on your mobile app, but also on your smart TV or your Fire Stick if you're at home or in the kitchen or wherever you happen to be. And we're across Facebook and on the X platform as well. And a lot of our guests today are in studio, and you can see most of our guests anyway via joining us via video, but also when they're in studio. And today's just one of those days where there's lots of people calling in, which is great. Yesterday was the same, actually. Right, the Tyrconnell Tribune this morning. The tragic events of last Friday night united a community in grief as the first of two young people killed in a road crash in Baltony were laid to rest in Gortahawk on Wednesday morning. Jamie Diver, who was in his early 20s, was remembered as having a passion for cars and the will do and the will to help others when he could. Father Donica O'Boyle also remembered the late Sean Martin McClafferty, who will be laid to rest today, and his family, as well as Josh Scanlon and Dara Lynch, who were also seriously injured in the single vehicle collision. And you would have heard from contact to the programme of the family of one of those injured to keep them in your prayers and thoughts, please. Parish priest highlighted that young people of any community are its greatest riches, as it represents the future, and this must be protected as life can be so fragile. On to the Donegal News this morning, and a distraught mother of a boy with a complex condition has spoken of how her family has been left in limbo after being told her son has no place in Little Angel's special school in Letterkenny for September. Aoife Dorian and her family are among nine Donegal families who've been informed by the special education needs organiser that despite being directed to send their children to Little Angels, the schools cannot accommodate them. The parents have launched a Facebook campaign called Don't Forget Our Little Angels for September 2025 to highlight the matter in December. The Donegal News first revealed concerns had emerged that the new state-of-the-art Little Angels school in Letterkenny will not have enough classrooms to meet demand when it opens shortly. And they've referenced nine families here. It could be actually up to 36 families and 36 young people without a place at that school. On to the Derry News this morning, and the Western Health and Social Care Trust has been accused of introducing major changes in the provision of domiciliary care in Derry without prior consultation or agreement with service users or their carers. On to the Nationals this morning, and you heard Michaela reference this in the news. Suspects in more than 40,000 crimes were out on bail awaiting trial last year. Shocking new figures have revealed. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I might be somewhat naive, and in fact, I'm sure I am. I wouldn't have realised there was that many people out on bail, to be honest with you. 40,000 people, that's a massive amount. Taoiseach Micheál Martin vowed yesterday to reform bail laws after the figures were revealed in the Dáil, but he cautioned that there are legal issues surrounding the presumption of innocence. Figures provided to Sinn Féin Justice spokesperson Matt Carthy revealed there were 114,655 incidents over the past 3 years where crimes were committed in cases where suspects were on bail. Again, these figures are remarkable. 114,000 crimes committed by the 40,000 plus people that are on bail. Obviously repeat offenders, but again, figures I just wouldn't have made up. The 40,348 instances last year represents 110 suspected crimes each day by individuals who were out on bail. And in conversation, the Taoiseach admitted the figures are huge and said the public are intolerant of those who engage in repeated criminal offences. But what's one of the root causes? Maybe the answer is on the front of the Irish Times. Overcrowded prisons. There's an overcrowded crisis as prisons are full. Prison overcrowding is at another crisis point, with all secure jails having reached or exceeded capacity for the first time. The number of male prisoners in Mountjoy Prison, Dublin, has this week grown to 1,000 for the first time. It's understood that more than 100 prisoners were sleeping on the floors of Mountjoy on Tuesday night when numbers reached a record 1,000. But is this about sentencing? Because, you know, there's another case today where someone had 3,000 child abuse images in their possession. 3,000. And I won't go into details, but you can imagine what had to happen to these children for those images to be produced. Absolutely horrendous. And they walk out on bail. And then you get people who are involved in a financial crime, for an example, you know, maybe defrauding the state of, you know, €60,000. There's one lady been locked up for that. And I'm not saying what is right or what's wrong, but surely that would be a better custodial sentence with rehabilitation on the outside, and send the person barely even worthy of that title, with 3,000 child abuse images in their possession, send them to jail. You know, let's curate who's in prison and for what, and send the people that should be there to prison, and those that arguably maybe could be rehabilitated on the outside, leave them on the outside. But it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be at the whim of certain judges as well. The women's wing of Limerick Prison was the most overcrowded at 163% capacity. Some 91 women were on Tuesday night being housed in the facility with a bed capacity of 56. On to the Irish Independent now, and very hard to escape the geopolitical international situation. I'm trying not to come out with it every single day, but there's very little in the papers besides this. French President Emmanuel Macron has said he will enter talks on using France's nuclear capabilities to defend European allies. The French leader gave a grave address to the nation last night in which he warned that Russia was at threat for all of Europe. He said Paris is open to discussing an extension of France's nuclear umbrella to its European partners. France and the UK are Europe's only two nuclear powers. In his televised... I didn't realise Germany didn't have any nuclear capability. In his televised speech, Mr Macron also said France would have to spend more on defence and would continue to help Ukraine. He acknowledged voters' concerns over Russia and over the new US administration upending of the international order. My eyes are a little bit tired this morning. Not much sleep last night, not going to lie to you. Thank you very much, Hudson. Also, too, yesterday or last night, and it's not in the papers today, remarkable comments from President Donald Trump as it relates to Gaza. You know, people have kind of argued whether or not genocide has happened in Gaza at the hands of the Israelis, backed by the likes of the US and others. But he said yesterday in a statement that Hamas needs to release all of its hostages and release the bodies of those that were killed or have been killed since October 7th of last year. It was not the year before last. And a lot of people say, well, you know, that's him talking tough. That's Donald Trump shooting from the hip, blah, 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 blah. But what he then went on to say is that if it's not done, he's going to give Israel everything it needs to finish the job. And he directed that not just at Hamas, but at Gazans as well. So he effectively said, unless Hamas, which is estimated to be 20 or 30,000 potentially in a population of 1 million plus, what he effectively said is if these hostages are not, or the remains of the hostages are not offered up, that Gaza will be wiped out. Not just Hamas, but all of Gaza, women, children, which is a remarkable intervention. And he's very powerful in what he has to say if you're Ukraine or if you are Gaza or Palestine, sorry, but not the same if you're Israel or Russia. You know, square that circle. Why is all the big talk against those that are arguably being oppressed? The Irish Farmers Journal this morning: anger is mounting among farmers who fear they'll be hit by a raft of changes to farming practices on peat soils. Tensions between farm organisations and the Department of Agriculture over possible new rules for farmers on peatland is rising, with the HFA protesting in Dublin on Tuesday and the IFA calling an emergency meeting in Athlone tonight. Minister for Agriculture Martin Hayden and the department have sought to downplay the importance of a recent meeting on re-wetting and reducing management intensity of 80,000 hectare from which farmers were excluded separately. 32,000 farmers on peatland are to be impacted by GEAC 2, which will see restrictions around drainage and ploughing. I mean, to be a farmer nowadays, dealing with all of these, what do you call it when they shorten words up to letters? You know, I can't remember what that's called again. But anyway, to try and, you know, to do with peatland or re-wetting or higher land, lower land, sheep, cows, you'd have to be the proverbial brain surgeon, wouldn't you, to keep track of all of that? I'm sure you do out there in the farming community. I wouldn't fancy it. On to the Irish Daily Star this morning, and a young man who threatened to kill a postmaster and his wife after he arrived late to claim his social welfare payment has been jailed for 10 months. Philip Dodu appeared at Letterkenny District Court charged with a number of offences. The court heard how he arrived at the post office on Main Street in Dunloe on December 20th last year and caused a scene. You'll have seen the footage, I'd imagine. Unless he didn't watch it, it was certainly spread so far and wide, everyone would have had access to it. And this footage was widely circulated on social media. Dodu, 23, can be seen in this footage and heard threatening staff before storming out of the building. He was later arrested by Gardaí and has been in custody in Castlereagh prison since the incident. Sergeant Jim Collins told how Dodu had arrived at the post office and while queuing, he became agitated and threatened to kill the local postmaster and his wife who were working at the premises. 10 months he's been sentenced to. The last 3 months have been suspended and backdated. He backdated the sentence as well to when the accused man went into prison on December 20th, meaning he'll still have about 4 months to serve following that court case. Right, the Sun this morning, almost 400,000 of us, our households, are in arrears on their gas and electricity bills, government officials have warned. These figures were out 2 or 3 weeks ago, but anyway. And they insist new targeted supports are needed to help pay them. It comes as 1 in 4 households are in arrears on gas bills and 1 in 10 on electricity. The Department of Environment has warned the new Energy Minister, Dara O'Brien, about the number of people in need of help as prices remain too high. A briefing document sent to the minister claims that the average annual electricity bill for a household in Ireland is 1,179, with the average annual gas bill 1,503. It also said Irish electricity prices are 61% higher now than they were in December 2020, while gas prices are an incredible 90% higher. Officials warned 230,000 electricity customers are in arrears on their bills, representing around 10% of the market. So they're saying that targeted supports will be required to provide for those least able to pay to reduce the number of customers in arrears and ensure that the figures do not grow further. And this is a conversation we've had on this show a number of times. It was off the back of some comments from senior government officials saying that electricity credits and what have you weren't going to feature in the next budget. But I think most people would be of the view that maybe universal credits or assistance is not required because there's no point giving money to people that don't need it because then it's not spent on what you're trying to address, is it? Make sure it goes to those and they have a list of the customers that are most struggling to try and give them some break from the pressures of life. Where would the money come? Well, it could come from the government recouping some of the money it overspent. The state paid out over 100 million euro in social welfare overpayments during the COVID pandemic. Now a special unit in the Department of Social Protection is trying to recover the cash with the help from revenue commissioners. The minister in charge, Dara O'Leary, said overpayments occur when a person provides false or misleading information in their application or through error on the part of either the claimant or the department. Those who were overpaid had a liability to repay the money that they weren't entitled to. Some 880,000 people received at least one payment during the pandemic. Many of us still have bills that are sitting there with revenue that you have to pay back. I didn't ask for it. Did I even apply for it? And now I've got this bill for 2,000 or 3,000 euro that they're chipping away at. But anyway, we welcome on to the programme Minister Neil Richmond, Minister of State in the Department of Foreign Affairs. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for your time again.
Pleasure to be with you, Greg.
What is the situation as it relates to, passport services, passport waiting times and what have you? I haven't heard many complaints, so normally you don't hear praise, so things must be middling at the moment, are they, Minister?
I think things are going exceptionally well, but we're taking this opportunity to make sure they go well and to make sure everything is as easy as possible for people. So why I really want to join with you this morning is to the people in Donegal and surrounds to please make the appeal that if they are booking a trip at this time of year, like lots of people are, perhaps a summer holiday, perhaps a to visit family abroad, perhaps a really important business trip, something people have been saving up for, before you do anything, check your passport. Just make sure it's in date. If it's expired, the online passport renewal system can get a passport turned around in about 24, 48 hours. It's a rapid service. It's night and day compared to what it was. But the biggest issue that'll come into my office or Nicky Bradley or Manus Boyle's office or anyone else is the person who they've got the passport out of the drawer or out of the safe box they might have on the wardrobe the night before going on that family holiday, and they say that their son or daughter or granny's passport or whoever it may be is out of date, and they've spent all this money on that big holiday, once in a lifetime, well deserved, well earned, and all of a sudden there's panic. We need a passport. And next thing they're hurtling down to Dublin to queue up all day and spend an awful lot of money to get an emergency passport, or else they're sacrificing a holiday. Whereas now, if they just take 20 seconds, 30 seconds to make sure all the passports and dates, they're not going to expire in the next 6 months. If they are, get a renewal in, we'll get it turned around as quick as possible.
Yeah, you have to make sure your passport's well in date as well too, isn't it? I mean, it can be, if depending on where you're going, for how long and how long's left on your passport, that could be complicated as well.
Absolutely. If you're going to a country that perhaps requires a visa and that's outside the EU, they'll be very, very stern on a passport. Certain airlines will also be quite strict. But look, Greg, we've 500 people working in the passport office in Balbriggan. Last year, they processed 1 million passports. It's going exceptionally well. A lot of resources have been put into new online systems. Everyone can apply online now. So the secondary message is not only check your passport, but do it. If you need to renew it, do it online. Mm-hmm. It's the fastest, most efficient way. It eliminates any sort of human error.
I've been one, I'm sure, of many, many people that have been caught out in getting a child's passport. Is there any chance that the system could be reviewed? As far as I'm aware and understand it now, if I go, say, for instance, to get documents signed at a Garda station, that guard has to be contacted by the passport office. And on a couple of occasions now, unfortunately, I went to one station that wasn't 24 hours, but also the second station, the guard in question just happened to be going on annual leave, and I wasn't aware of that. It seems a wee bit outdated and an antiquated way of doing things, and it catches an awful lot of people out in a system that otherwise seems to be working quite well, Neil.
Yeah, like children's passports different, Greg, to be quite honest, particularly new passport applications. They do take longer, and there is an awful lot of duty of care put in because, to be quite frank, and people mightn't like to hear it, that's where the greatest risk is. The greatest risk of forgery, of course, but most importantly, human trafficking, and when there might be a dispute over the custody of a child and someone's trying to spirit a child. And I don't say this to dramatise it, but this has happened. This is why the systems are quite a little bit more onerous for new passport applications for children. But I take your point absolutely in relation to cards. The system is always under constant review. We want to have that balance. And it is a tricky balance to make sure that it is efficient, fit for purpose, and it isn't antiquated, but equally that we have those checks and balances to protect our most precious commodity, which is, of course, children.
You talked of a million plus passports. 120,000 of those passports were issued in Northern Ireland last year. As long as I've been doing this job, there have been calls for a passport office in Northern Ireland. Is that anything that you'd be interested in exploring? And if not, why not?
Well, it's certainly something that is always under review. We have the main public passport office in Dublin. We have one in Cork as well. And there was discussions in relation to having one in Sligo. But I think what we instead are really looking to do and will be more efficient is moving, or which we have done in the last 18 months, moving a lot more services online. So rather than having to go to the passport office, to be quite frank, Greg, we don't want anyone to ever have to need to go to the passport office. That's for emergencies. That's for the family member who perhaps is gravely ill and it's a rush to get there, or it's a medical thing. That's where we want to get it to. So we feel that we're constantly investing in online systems to make it as efficient as possible. I had a colleague living in Derry who applied for their passport last Thursday, landed in the post on Monday.
Mm-hmm. One other question, if you don't mind, before we on. You are Minister of State in the Department of Foreign Affairs too, which is a wide-ranging office. Just curious as to your views on comments from President Donald Trump overnight, where he effectively said, unless I'm misreading what he said, that all Gazans are at risk if Hamas doesn't offer up the bodies of hostages or even those that are living. He said that they've been warned. All of Gaza is being warned that if that doesn't happen, if Hamas do not do that, that he will give Israel everything it needs to finish the job of all Gazans. Now, he wasn't specific to Hamas in some of those remarks. Just in your with your portfolio as Minister at the Department of Foreign Affairs, what's your view on his comments there?
Yeah, I'll say two things to that, Greg. Firstly, it feels like every morning I wake up, but it is literally every morning I wake up and there's a new push notification from a comment from President Trump in relation to the situation in the Middle East and Ukraine. And it's very important not to overreact or react to every comment, but certainly what we've seen in this conflict in the Middle East, and the second point I make is, you know, the Israelis have been completely, you know, over the top in terms of their response to what was horrific events on October 7th. And from my point of view as a Minister of Foreign Affairs, we're quite clear. We have a fragile ceasefire at the moment that the US, of all people, and including the Trump administration, played a big role in this. They're actually the guarantors of peace in this current stage of the escalation. Absolutely agree. All hostages need to be released now. Bodies need to be returned as well. But we need to stop the violence. And what I really want to see from an Irish government point of view is we have tons and tons of humanitarian aid from Ireland in trucks stuck on the Jordanian border looking to get into Gaza. Let's focus on actually getting the aid into people who are starving. When I talk about humanitarian aid, these are food parcels and tents. It's not rockets and missiles. Let's worry about the ordinary Gazan people in that regard first and foremost.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's what I was doing in asking the question. When you have someone with the power that he has, effectively, you know, warning an entire collection of people that they will be punished for the actions of Hamas. It's just next level stuff, Neil, that we wouldn't be familiar with.
It's grossly unsettling, Greg, I'll be quite honest. And it's not rhetoric that, to be honest, is new to this conflict. We have heard this from the Israeli Defence Minister, a number of members of the Knesset, and what we'd call the far more hawkish elements of what is a pretty hawkish government in Tel Aviv at the moment. To hear it from the most powerful man in the world is deeply unsettling, and I think it's utterly counterproductive. But this is Trumpian politics 101. It's the bold, brash, slightly nauseating statement in one regard to try and force the agenda in his direction to achieve something else. So what I really do want to see, I do agree with President Trump, I want to see the hostages released, I want to see the bodies returned, I don't want to see any of those victorious ceremonies that Hamas fighters stood over Israeli bodies a couple of weeks ago. But equally, the violence has to stop, the threat of violence has to stop. The people of Gaza need humanitarian aid, and let's try and focus on that rather than ratcheting up tensions in what is an already fragile atmosphere.
And very finally, and I'm not ambushing you on these questions, I know you're right across these issues. The last issue is just the triple lock. We're getting a lot of contact from people very concerned about the removal of part of that, and also the desire for them to have a say on any changes to the triple lock. Are you sympathetic to those views? Do you share those views?
Well, I don't share the views, and my view on the triple lock has been consistent for 20 years. I think it's archaic. I think it's out of date. And I think I do want to have a reasonable, rational debate on the triple lock and on the importance of updating it. We didn't see this in terms of Deputy Pierce Doherty's contributions on Tuesday. He demanded a referendum on neutrality, just like People Profit did. we are not a neutral country. We're part of the European Union. We have allies. But we are military neutral. And the triple rock, as it stands, let's talk about the facts, what it is. At the moment, if we want to send more than 12 Irish peacekeepers, we tried to send more than 12 Irish members of defence forces to train Ukrainians to clear landmines. We couldn't, because not only do we need a vote at all, absolutely agree with retaining that, we need the sanction of our government, absolutely. But we also need a UN resolution. A UN resolution can be vetoed by any one of the five permanent members of the Security Council.
But is it not the UN system that needs to change? Because, of course, in the example you gave, it doesn't feel right, okay? But at the same time, particularly for soldiers and families of soldiers, there is a bit of oversight then as to the type of operations we can engage in under the UN banner, if you know what I mean. Whereas you remove that, and then you know yourself, Neil. it takes government approval. That's easy done around the cabinet table, and then a vote in the Dáil is easy achieved when you've got a big majority. Do you know what I mean? So it means that it feels like whatever happens with our soldiers, it's just the will of the government of the time.
Well, it's actually a democratic demonstration. We have, yes, this government has a big majority in the Dáil because the majority of Irish people elected or indeed re-elected this government. My party's manifesto made it very clear that we were going to remove the triple lock. People knew what they were voting for. This isn't a surprise. It's in the programme for government. We had consultations around the country only a number of years ago. We've been talking about this for a while, but I think it's really, really important. We're not detaching ourselves from the United Nations. I was in the UN in Geneva all last Tuesday. There are many other countries, neutral and non-neutral, who engage in peacekeeping missions. But let's be quite frank, the UN does need reform, absolutely, and playing an active part in it. But we haven't had a peacekeeping mission without a UN mandate since 2014. And in that time, there has been a number of EU-led missions that Ireland has been a part of, K4 policing mission in Bosnia, which we weren't able to take part in because the mandate wasn't renewed by the UN, even though it was EU-led. Equally, two UN operations in the Mediterranean, looking to stop, on one hand, people smuggling, on the other hand, drug smuggling. We couldn't participate them because Russia vetoed them and it never made it to the Security Council. So I think we need to detach. This isn't about abandoning the UN. We will always be committed to the United Nations system. Irish soldiers will continue to serve under the blue helmets and with great distinction in the Golden Heights and elsewhere. But we fundamentally believe that this is about national sovereignty. When the people of Ireland make a democratic decision, we need to trust them. People elect a government. They elect a government with clear eyes at what exactly we said we were going to do.
But in electing, I get you, Minister, I get you. But I understand exactly what you're saying. But also, electing a government, it's not a blank check either. And I think the actions of any government, as best as it can, should reflect the will of its people.
Of course not. But let's be quite clear, Greg. We sought a mandate. We were quite clear on a number of things, including the triple lock. It was in our manifesto. It's in the programme for government. This is what democracy is. But also, we're not trying to force anything through here. What's happened this week? A memo was brought to Cabinet with draft heads of legislation. That is now going to go to the relevant Oireachtas Committee of our sovereign parliament for pre-legislative scrutiny. But it'll take as long as it needs. We're not railroading anything through. We're not silencing democratic voices. We're more than happy to engage. But what we've seen initially is a response from the opposition that is downright opposed to this, which is fine. They're entitled to oppose it. But yes, they're engaging in scare tactics and deliberate misinformation. Let's talk about the facts, what we're trying to do, not to scare people. Ultimately, we want to get down to the business of making sure that we have a sovereign foreign policy and we're not at the will of Russia, China, or indeed Trump's America.
Okay, listen, thanks for covering those issues with me, Minister Neil Richmond. Take care. Thank you. The whole purpose of the original conversation there from the Minister of State and the Department of Foreign Affairs is make sure your passport's in date. Go in and find it first. You know, often people think it's in a suitcase or it's in a drawer and they go and look for it and it's not there. Find it and make sure that it is in date, especially if you hope to get away Easter or into the summer, because I know people that have got caught out by this very recently. It's very easy done because we've so much to be getting on with and thinking about, etc., etc. In studio with me now is Highland Radio's Jimmy Stafford, who is also now the president of the Letterkenny Chamber for a second time. Congratulations, Jimmy. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, delighted. Yeah, absolutely delighted to take up the role yesterday from our AGM. So, yeah, busy year ahead.
It is. Is a year too short? Because it seems like no time at all since Claire was sitting there opposite me. And, you know, it is an opportunity to go in and continue the work, but also maybe to introduce, you know, maybe you might have ideas or things. A year seems a short enough term. Two would be good.
Well, speaking on behalf of Claire, I can tell you a year is long enough because it comes to that point at the
end. I know it's busy, but.
Yeah, it is. It's really busy. And you do become to a point at the end where you've done it and it's time to pass the mantle, you know. It's a long year, but it's a great year and it's a busy year. So I think I'd say on my behalf and Claire's behalf, I'd say a year is plenty, unless the board want to change that and somebody else wants to take. But yeah, it's a plenty for a year and you get loads in. I think you go out on a high as well, Greg. You know, you look at Claire yesterday and now she could just go home last night and pass the chain, as the fella said.
That's right.
And move on.
I insisted last year she wore the chain, but you haven't got yours on.
I have it here.
We might get it on before the end of the show. The last time you were president of the chamber was around COVID time, right? Which was very different for lots of reasons. Mm. How did the pandemic affect your role as president at that time?
It was funny, Greg. I was saying to you before we came on, 5 years ago, I think yesterday, that it was all announced and we went into that dreaded lockdown. I remember that call, Tony Forrester called me. I said, Jimmy, what are we going to do? And I says, well, okay, we have two choices. One is we bury our heads in the sand, or two, we just go out and we just be positive as much as we can. And that's what we did, Greg. And it was a very different presidency for me. Like, I had no events, nothing, but everything was online. And one of the memories I have was, I remember RT had said, and I was up here with you in February when it was a part of January, and then RT said, will we do a thing, Eileen Magner? And they weren't allowed inside a building. So we had to do an emergency Zoom meeting, a board meeting. And I sat outside the Radisson, and I still have that picture at a table with my laptop. And I'll just remember that picture forever. I just thought, oh God, I'm never going to do this again. And that was the abiding memory. But you know, when you look back, Greg, it was a year, I suppose, in some ways of positivity. If you remember the posters we had up in the windows of businesses and, you know, we'll be back soon. And I think we were the first, it's Letterkenny and Donegal, and across Donegal, we put up these posters and around the towns to say, we will be open soon. And I think that was, and we got through it, you know.
Well, a lot of businesses too, still to this day now, have an improved online presence, more of a hybrid way of doing business as a result of that. That fast-tracked a lot of that, I think, for businesses. It's not that long ago that we had Tony Forrester and then President Claire McDonough in studio with us, and they were really quite pointed in their remarks as it relates to investment into this area, more generally speaking. Is that a campaign that you want to continue with? I know it's the position of the chamber, so of course it is, but you know, what's your views on that, where we're at and where we need to go?
Absolutely, Greg. I think, and we just even discussed this last week, we had a committee meeting as well around this, that infrastructure and all that revolves around infrastructure is going to be a key thing for us this year in 2025 from a lobbying perspective. And I think that's the key one. You know, the Chamber has many facets. One of the key ones for us is lobbying around that whole FDI bit. And when you talk to the industry, the businesses, the larger industries in Letterkenny and Donegal, that's one of the top things in their priorities is from our infrastructure. I think, Greg, from our perspective, you look, and that was what Tony and Claire had talked about, because we had discussed it at a board member, is that we now need, as in unity, you know, all the different groups come together, begin that lobbying, not begin it, but continue it and be stronger, one voice, and that we get our fair share of what you might call the pot up here in the Northwest, Greg. Because you know yourself, you've been around the country, I drive as well, and you go down the Eastern Corridor motorways and you go into Tuam, Galway, and then you come back towards the Northwest. We've no dual carriageway, nothing like that. And that's the worst part of my journey when I'm coming back from my working in Dundalk or Monaghan, that A5, that Lifford Road. So I think that whole voice, that one voice, working with the county councillors, the local municipal district and the business community, especially our members, like 310 members. And Greg, when you do the surveys, that's the, you know, from this radio show, they're the main issues that come up time and time again.
And one of the main issues is traffic in Letterkenny, right? Yeah. Now, I know Letterkenny Chamber, it's called Letterkenny Chamber, but you represent businesses beyond Letterkenny. But one of the big frustrations around Letterkenny now is access and getting around Letterkenny. The traffic chaos, you know, and we hear from people saying, I don't even go to Letterkenny now because it's not worth the hassle. One voice that you don't hear an awful lot in relation to that is from the business community. And I hope it's not an unfair question, but why is that? Is it that traffic situation in Letterkenny doesn't affect business? Or is it that they're concerned that if they make too big of an issue of it, that it could actually damage business? Because the road infrastructure is not going to get fixed, right? But if businesses are saying things are difficult to get around in, then maybe people won't come in. Or, like, I'm just curious, a business is not really terribly affected by it or purposely not talking about it?
More and more we're hearing it from businesses, certainly. So, I mean, that's part of... So we set up a subcommittee now in the chamber, only in the last few weeks, actually. You know, we always talk about it, but in fairness to Bernard Gallagher, who came and said, like, he wrote a document, which is a really good document, with some really good tangible small things. Like, we're not going to be able to build a motorway or a dual carriageway around Letterkenny, but I suppose what we're saying is there are small things we're doing. I suppose businesses are talking about it, Craig, amongst themselves, and you'll hear a lot more of it, I think, in the next few weeks and months as we start to, as a chamber, talk about it as well. And there are certain, look, I mean, as I say, I travel around Ireland and I go to Galway and I'm stuck in Galway. The other towns are suffering as well, and that's not to take away from Letterkenny. And certainly it has its pinch points, as I might call them, and I think it's if we could solve those pinch points, Greg, you know, and get those little small, but you know, it's like going into a needle, if you like, or an eye of a needle, get those sorted. But it's, look, it has been discussed out there, there's no doubt about that, but I think it's certain times is there's key busy times, as you know well, and then there's times when it's not so busy, so maybe it's in trying to get that message.
But the traffic always seems to be busy, if you know what I mean. But yeah. I know what you're saying, there are times that people could be encouraged to come into Letterkenny, of course.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, parking access, a town bus, all of these things would help. Over the course of the following year, what are your priorities?
I think, Greg, well, the first thing is, as you know, this is our 60th anniversary. So, and you know, you look back, and I was saying yesterday, if you look back 60 years ago in 1965, what were the key things then? It was social change, it was technological advances. We're in the same era in 2025. I think this year we've a lot planned in terms of celebrating our 60th anniversary. We have a new board. We have five new people who've come on the board, Greg, which is fantastic. And credit to those who've stepped off the board as well, have been with us for so many years. So we've lots planned. We have no different Highland Radio and the awards on Sunday night. We have our awards in November celebrating business in Letterkenny and beyond. So looking forward to that. We have our President's Lunch. We have lots of other stuff. There's so much. And of course, St. Patrick's Day coming up on Monday week, the 17th. And I think it's just, you know, we've 310 members and growing all the time. Shop LK, as you know, is 7 million at this stage. It's growing as well. So continue to focus on that. Continuing. It's I suppose, trying to get the positive message out there as well, Greg. And that's not to take away from the challenges that are out there. There are challenges right across every town. I don't mind saying it, you know, I'm from Cork and Cove, but I mean, Cove now has a population of 20,000 people and they've one road into Cove, which is the Fota Road. And if you saw the social media down in Cove about that one road, so many towns are facing similar challenges to us. But I think, going back to what you said earlier on, I think as a chamber and as a lobby voice, that's where we need to push ourselves up another level, Greg, and that'll be key for us.
But but people might be listening, Jimmy, and when you're playing down the issues that they think are very serious, they might wonder how strongly you might end up lobbying on them.
Oh, I'm not playing them down. I think they're affecting me personally.
We've got people listening to us not live in Cove.
Oh, yeah, no, but I'm just saying lots of places, that's where we need to be strong on the
lobbying side. But
then
again, you look at Sligo. You know, they've had the Sligo's been freed up to a most part. The traffic doesn't go through the town. You know, that's what they're looking at. They're not looking at similarly bad places. They're looking at places where
their own, you're looking your own
things
backyard.
Have improved, and that's what they want to see.
Yeah.
It is kind of, I'm not saying it's unprecedented, but your brother's also the head of a chamber.
Yeah, Toddy is Cove Chamber. Yeah,
that's so crazy.
This is second year. I think he might be, like, they do it differently down there, 2 years. So, but he had to do a second year, so they do 2 years in a row. So going back to your first question, and he's been very active as well in the chamber. Donna Marie was asking me, did it run the family? No, it was never running in the family.
Well,
so
does that run in the family, being the president?
As in previous, my parents and whatever.
Oh,
so,
right, I guess.
It's all about, my mum and dad were big into the community and that sort of stuff.
Obviously the natural, it is in your family then, so, because obviously the natural progression is to try and get into, you know, positions of influence.
Yeah.
I mean, what else? You know, that's, you know, when outside of elected politics, you know, I think you're continuing the work then of your parents, because you're trying to get into positions of influence in your communities to affect change that makes life better for everyone.
Yeah, and I think the chamber, sometimes you can get, you know, it's called Letterkenny Chamber. It sometimes can be linked, and it is primarily a lobbying business. But I mean, as well as that, the chamber is a community organisation, as a lot of chambers I know, and Cove Chamber. So if I look at Letterkenny Chamber from a community perspective and the stuff we're involved with CDP and many other organisations at a local level, the Christmas Lights, Paddy's Day, the Busking Festival, stuff like that, and so many other things. And that's the beauty of the chamber, that we're embedded in the community. And if you look at the board from right across, different, Sean has joined us here, Sean Quinn from Highland Radio. You know, we've so many different facets of people who are in the board. And I suppose that's, again, I look at a board, Greg, of people, there's 17 on the board who are really active at a local level.
Yeah.
Putting on yellow vests, marshalling on Paddy's Day and all that sort of stuff. And I think people, you know, they're in it for a reason. They're in it for the community as well, and to better the community for their family, their kids, their workers and all that sort of stuff.
All right, brilliant stuff. Well, I'm sure we'll talk over the course of the next year. Unless, Jimmy, there's anything you want to add before we finish up. I know you paid tribute to Claire, which is always important as well.
I mean,
and it's interesting to see some new faces on board, and fair play to those that have been working very hard up until now and maybe stepping away for a time. So,
If anybody, look, one thing I'll say this year, if anybody would like to get involved, Greg, you know, put their hand up, and that's where we've 5 new board members this year. Come forward. And not alone that, Greg, if anybody would like to become involved at a committee level, co-opted, you don't have to be a board member. And I suppose just say it's not an onerous task, I mean, to come on board and support us as well. But just to say thanks to all the members out there, Greg, because without them, the membership keeps the chamber functioning.
Yes,
and that's the key one. It's no different to any organisation. Without the members out there who are subscribing and paying their annual subscription, that's a big thing. So looking forward to it, and sure, we'll have a bit of fun along the way as well.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, just around the corner, St. Patrick's Day, huge event, brings an awful lot of people in to Letterkenny, as the parades do right across the county, and lots of money to spend and all that. So it won't be long before the first biggie is right upon us. All right, Jimmy Stafford, thank you
very
much indeed.
Thanks a million.
He is presenter of Monday Night Sessions and Centre Stage, of course, president of the Letterkenny Chamber, and in his spare time, risk and operations manager with the Bank of Ireland. I'm sure there's
talk
plenty.
Talk about that another day.
There's plenty to be doing there. All right, we will actually. Okay, yeah, take
thanks,
care,
Greg.
Jimmy. Back
Cheers,
after
Greg.
These.
Thank you.
A caller believes the assessment of the passport office is viewing it through rose-tinted glasses. We've gotten a local politician to make representations on behalf of a friend. He's getting his passport renewed. They're saying it's a first-time application. The office will not speak to our local rep. He needs it for Monday, and it now looks like he'll miss his trip. I think there certainly was a rose-tinted view of straightforward applications. Yours doesn't sound like that at all. And I believe there still is an issue with passport staff working with local politicians. I'm not sure that was ever resolved. Do you always need a passport to go to England? Not really a question for the minister there. It depends on whether it's a boat, whether it's an airline, where you're going from the north, where you're going from the south, all that manner of stuff as well. So there are many answers to that question. Why do we need passports when all illegal people are coming here don't need them? Well, you can get rid of your passport on a plane somewhere and claim asylum if you wish. You can do that. Use your passport to get on the plane, and before you land, flush it into the toilet. If you want to go down that route, if you want to do what has happened to people coming here, you can do that, of course. How many of these re-offenders will receive free legal aid for the umpteenth time? Well, all of them, if they qualify, is the answer that you probably knew before you asked. They should never be done away with, the slow set, so this is something completely different. I'll come back to that one, actually. Hi, Greg. If you could say a big thank you to some good person who found my bank card outside Costcutters Car and Donna and handed it into the shop. Thank you. That comes in from Willie Doherty. Willie, isn't it lovely when you get a bit of news like that, because having to cancel the card, get a new card, and a lot of stuff now is paid for recurring sort of debits on your card. It can be an absolute nightmare. It would be for me anyway. But isn't it nice that still, and the majority of people out there, find a card and hand it in? And as I say, is the majority do that? Greg, the mechanic within video games you referred to is called loot boxes. Indeed, it's called loot boxes in Fortnite, but it's not loot boxes in other games that I would play. It exists in the same loophole as trading card games or gacha machines, those wee doohickeys that used to be in shopping centres that would pop out like a Kinder Egg toy. But minor correction, Fortnite doesn't have those gambling mechanics. All it's purchased, a direct purchase, and aren't obfuscated by random chance. Well, if you go round and open, the loot boxes, you don't know what's in them either. You know what I mean? So there is a risk and a risk and reward almost. So I would agree with you and disagree with you. I think fundamentally you are correct, but I still believe that there is subtle gambling elements to these games. But I mean, if you go FIFA, you get a FIFA pack, for an example, and you could get Ronaldo or whoever is at the top trump at this time, or you could get a crappy Liverpool or Manchester United player. So there is still that element that I referenced to, but I appreciate actually you texting in. Right, okay. Yes, a caller says there should be slow set should never have been done away with. It gave people an opportunity to find somebody. Nowadays, it's so hard for young folk. I don't know the ins and outs of what goes on, but I do know that sometimes when we get contacts in here, it's that, you know, I think me and Lee were the same. We'd have been too shy to go up and ask anyone. And if you did, it would be one. But you do hear stories nowadays of it just being a walk up and away you go, and you can switch between some. But it all depends on the individual as well, of course. I'm not sure if it was easier now than it was then. Shocking to hear the minister just say that we are not a neutral country anymore, as we are part of Europe. If that is the case, then it's time to get out of the EU, especially with their plans to create an 800 billion euro funded army, which will cost us dearly economically, and also their plans to fine us huge millions for not reaching their ridiculous climate change quotas. Yeah, indeed. He did say what some would see is the quiet part out loud, that we aren't neutral. Well, we are militarily neutral, but even that is maybe a line that is blurring if we get rid of the UN element of the triple lock, some would feel.